well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be spending some time with our friend Costas Moros from the Second Amendment Foundation, Director of Legal Education and Research. We're going to be talking about California gun laws because I'm sure you've seen this too. Any number of op-eds, talking heads, sound bites, bemoaning the fact that the suspect in Saturday's shooting at the White House Correspondents' Center so easily acquired a firearm. As far as I can tell, none of these individuals who take issue with how supposedly easy it was for this guy to get a gun have offered any specific recommendations about what they want to see, what type of laws would have stopped an individual who did not have a criminal record, who passed a background check, who apparently waited the 10 days required under California law to take possession of a pump-action shotgun and a 1911 pistol. I haven't seen anybody actually say, okay, here's what we need, other than more gun control. Okay, what exactly are you talking about here? Costas Moros has noticed this as well. So again, we're going to talk about California gun laws. Also going to talk about, speaking of waiting periods, the Second Circuit hearing an appeal today, oral argument taking place in a case involving a challenge to Vermont's 72-hour waiting period. And I want to ask Costas about that because the district court upheld that waiting period law by basically using the same argument we saw from the First Circuit Court of Appeals recently regarding Maine's 72-hour waiting period, that the right to keep and bear arms does not encompass the right to acquire an arm. Yeah. So the state could put in a 6-month waiting period. They could put in a 6-year waiting period without implicating your right to keep and bear arms. You should be lucky that it's only 72 hours. I want to talk with Costas about that as well. In fact, let's get started here with our conversation with Costas Moros from the Second Amendment Foundation. Take a look and a listen. Costas, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. I felt like we were having a Vulcan mind meld yesterday reading your post on X. I think we were infuriated about the same thing. I know specifically you called out the gun control groups for making these sort of vague calls about the need to do more in the wake of the shooting at the White House Correspondents' Center on Saturday, the attempted assassination. And yet, Costas, they didn't say what more that should be. I debunked like 3 different op-eds yesterday, all again doing the same thing, right? We're a nation awash in weapons. We need to do more. So let's talk about the California gun laws that the suspect in this case had to go through to legally purchase a pump action shotgun. And I've seen 2 different brands mentioned. I'm still not sure we know what brand, but it seems like he had a 38 caliber 1911 is the last thing that I saw. So in order to legally buy one of those or both of those items in California, what do you have to do?
Okay, so first of all, you would have to pass get your firearm safety certificate, which is a multiple choice 30-question test about gun safety. It asks you the basics about firearms. I'm not saying it's difficult, but it is a step you have to take. So you have to know it's 30 questions, and you have to pass, I think it's a 70% pass rate, so you have to get 21 of them correct, and it costs $25. So you do that first. And you can do that at most FFLs, and the certificate's good for 5 years. You're exempt if you have a CCW permit, but I don't believe there's any indication this guy got a CCW permit. And the next thing you have to do is, of course, pass a background check. And because he was buying a handgun, you also have to prove your residence. So it can't just be you have to have 2 forms of ID, not just a driver's license. So you have to have your driver's license or ID card plus some sort of proof of residence to prove where you live, because they register handguns by address in California. And honestly, I have to refresh my memory. That might have expanded to long guns too in recent years. I don't recall. But for our purposes, it's fine because we know he bought a handgun, so he would have had to do that step regardless of the long gun status. And finally, of course, you'd have to pass the universal background check, which California has, and pay a $37 gross dealer record of sale fee, which is the California background check fee. So he would have had to pass a background check to get these firearms. The pistol had to be on the California roster because he bought it new. As I understand, it wasn't sold used or consignment. So, and the reporting is he bought an Arms Corps 1911, which is a 38 super semi-automatic handgun. It's I think I joked yesterday, it's kind of an eclectic choice. I'm not sure why he went with 38 super. My best guess is, given he bought a Maverick 88, which is a good but a budget shotgun, my guess is he just bought the cheapest thing the gun store had. They probably couldn't sell the weird caliber, so they probably had it on sale, and he picked that up. I know 38 super is popular in Mexico, but it's not super popular up here. So yeah, that's, he would have had to basically run the gauntlet of, other than maybe New York City, which also requires a permit, beforehand to buy a gun. These are, you know, about the strictest it gets in terms of, background checks and, hoops to jump through before you buy a gun. And that's why you see these gun control groups. You know, when a gun crime, a gun related crime happens in a state that's seen as pro gun, like, you know, Utah or something, they'll bash that state specifically. They'll say Utah doesn't have gun laws. But when a crime happens, or in this case, when the guns are acquired in a state Giffords likes, like California, their top rated state, they get very vague in general and talk about how we're awash in guns, as you said. They never actually say, well, you know, we tried in California, but unfortunately some people are just always going to get through. They'll never concede that, you know.
So, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and again, I mean, he had the 10-day waiting period, right?
Oh, yeah, and I forgot that, the 10-day waiting period. And of course, depending on what he bought it, the excise tax of 11%. Yeah,
right. Correct. And then every time we, you know, we've heard that he went to the range with these guns. So in order to buy ammunition in California, he would have had to pass another background check.
Ammo background check, yes, yeah. I don't know whether he went to... Was it reported he went to the range? If so, then yes, he would have been buying ammo frequently as well.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. And, you know, so he buys these guns, and perhaps, as you say, Giffords gives California its highest grade. So I think it's fair to call it the most gun-controlled state in the union. He then takes those guns to arguably maybe the second most restrictive place in the country, Washington, D.C., where he violated several laws, including having an unregistered firearm, unregistered ammunition. What laws could stop somebody who doesn't have a criminal record, right? Not a prohibited person, apparently no, you know, mental health history in their background. Short of a complete ban on the sale of firearms, what law could have stopped this guy from buying a gun?
And that's exactly it. So when they make these very vague statements about we need more gun control, even when all the gun control, you know, if you go through the Giffords or Everytown list of proposed policies, California has them all. And D.C. has them all, where this crime was committed, for that matter. So when they keep, even after all that, when they still say, well, we need more gun laws, what they're too cowardly to say, because they know it would cause too much political blowback, is that they want a full gun ban. There's nowhere else to go, right? Other than, you know, because think about it. This guy was a teacher, Caltech grad, you know, other than probably saying some crazy stuff online, which frankly a lot of people do these days. There's no background check he wouldn't have passed. You know, he would probably passed even a psych exam, not to give them ideas, but he probably would have passed even that, you know, because he just was, until he decided to try and kill the president, he was a model citizen, again, other than his crazy online ranting. So what loss stops a model citizen from buying guns? Sometimes we need to accept it's kind of the same thing with the Vegas shooter. If somebody who has no history of violence and is basically an upstanding member of society suddenly decides to break bad and be a criminal, or in this case, an assassin, there's not a lot we can do about that. And I know that's an uncomfortable reality. But if the comforting side is that it's so rare, you know, like, yes, there's going to be the occasional person like that, that happens. But in a country of almost 350 million people, the fact that it's only happened a couple of times should be comforting, because yes, there is just some things we can't stop unless we are willing to sacrifice our liberties and ban all guns. But as Japan proved, even that doesn't stop it. You know, I think assassins, I said this online too. If there's one type of criminal that gun control laws are least likely to stop, it is an assassin, because these are typically, not always, but often more determined people, sometimes more intelligent. And the guy in Japan built his own gun to kill former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. So it's just not the type of crime that gun control, which is already, in my opinion, unlikely to stop crimes. It's the type of crime that gun control has the least effect on. In my view, I mean, this guy traveled across the country by train and didn't stop to reconsider. That is, you know, whatever crazy that might be, it is commitment. He was determined to try to do this, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you know. No, I mean, and you know, to that point, we just saw a mass shooting in Mexico, very restrictive gun laws that failed to prevent this 27-year-old from, you know, taking a gun to the Pyramid of the Moon and opening fire on tourists. You know, I think you're right about the committed nature of these individuals. And, you know, again, I don't know what gun control law could have prevented that. Even frankly, even if you had a complete ban on the sale of firearms, we are a nation, as the gun controllers like to remind us, awash in weapons, right? 400 million firearms, more guns than people, as I saw one op-ed write yesterday. And, you know, which brings me to this point, because this is something else that I think everybody on the left is ignoring here. While they want to make this about guns, they're ignoring the fact that homicides in this country right now, at least at their lowest level since 1960, if not before, violent crime overall is near record lows. We are seeing those numbers move in the right direction. And I've seen no acknowledgement of that in any of these, you know, columns or editorials about, you know, unchecked violence in the United States. No mention of the fact that the numbers are actually going the right way and that we are safer today than at any point in my lifetime.
It's totally true. It's actually stunning. You know, what I expected, that after the COVID and the lockdown era crime surge, that we would drift back down to normal, back to where we were in 2019. But not only did we drift back down to 2019, we blew right past it and kept going, and we're still dropping. Look at cities like Philadelphia at this time in 2022 had like something like 150 murders, and it's at like 30 or 40 right now. It's crazy. I don't know exactly what's causing it, and I'm hopeful it continues. But yes, to your point, like we sometimes get caught up in these horrific high profile examples, you know, a mass shooting, although mass shootings are actually down too, but or something horrific like the Charlie Kirk assassination. But overall, violence in this country is way down. It's probably the low, as of, I think 2025 will be the lowest ever recorded. And if it's not, then 2026 will be, because by all accounts, these first few months, the decline is continuing, you know? I don't know what's causing it. I hope it continues. I know the gun control groups like to credit the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. In fact, today I got, I don't know if you saw, the first time Giffords ever responded to me on Twitter. They quote tweeted me about something I wasn't even talking about them on. I was talking about the stat of, you know, the kids murdered by gun stat that they like to cite. And I made a post about how that's about to not be true anymore, because traffic accidents are about to overtake them thanks to the drop in recent years. And they quote tweeted that and basically credited the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act for that, which is silly, because as I've pointed out to them and others, according to the stats which they've released, the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, as of the end of 2024, had stopped 800 people from buying guns. Even if you assumed all 800 of those people were gonna kill someone, which is ridiculous, so, you know, maybe a few of them would, but very few, the drop in homicide is way more than just 800. It's dramatically more. So they try and credit the one piece of gun control legislation that passed while ignoring their own predictions about Bruin, where they predicted it would cause this huge surge in violence, and the opposite has happened. It's been incredible.
Yeah, it really has been. I mean, and we're seeing that drop, you know, in constitutional carry states as well as in the gun-controlled states, which leads me to believe that, you know, there are probably a number of factors at work. The other factor that the gun-control groups like to talk about is the community violence intervention programs. And maybe there is something to some of those programs. I hesitate to give too much credit to community gun violence intervention in general, because I think there are a lot of those programs that don't operate with accountability or transparency. But you know, I'm willing to accept that. Okay, maybe some of these programs are, you know, convincing people to stay on the straight and narrow instead of committing violent crimes. I also wouldn't call those gun control measures because they don't actually prevent anybody from acquiring a firearm or exercising their Second Amendment rights. So, you know, if that's the direction that Giffords and Everytown wants to take, cool. God bless them.
I'm skeptical of
my right at all, right?
Yeah, I'm skeptical of those too because the decline is so broad-based and everywhere. Yeah. Are you telling me that every place has implemented these equally well? Because right. You know that but you're right. If they think it works, God bless, give it a try. Right now, we had just had the Attorney General Bonta in California complaining that the federal government has cut some of those funds, mm-hmm. you know, that, and they're saying that that's going to cause crime to increase. But the amount of money they're talking about, you know, some hundreds of millions of dollars, I just want to say to Attorney General Bonta, have you seen California's budget? If you're saying that these programs save so many lives and they're so effective and the federal government cut the money, why doesn't California foot the bill? You're saying these are such great programs, the tab isn't that high. You're spending billions and billions of dollars on a train that isn't good, not to go too off topic, but a train that is way overdue and way over budget. Just scrap that and, you know, do all the community violence intervention programs you want forever.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But so it's a little funny that they're basically acting like their hands are tied because the federal government cuts some of these funds when states could spend on it if they think it's worthwhile, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, listen, while I got you here, I want to throw you a curveball unrelated to what we've been talking about. Maybe not, because California does have a 10-day waiting period. Second Circuit hearing oral arguments today in a challenge to Vermont's 72-hour waiting period. I was reading some of your posts on X, and so as I understand it, the district court kind of took the view that the First Circuit Court of Appeals recently took about Maine's background check law, right? That a waiting period doesn't even implicate the Second Amendment, that you've got the right to keep and bear arms, but that doesn't mean you've got the right to acquire one, and certainly not acquire one in a timely fashion. Is that right?
I don't remember exactly what the district court ruled, because I do remember it also looked at history. So it's possible it concluded that. I would have to refresh my memory on the plain text step, but did a historical analysis anyway. We did an amicus brief on that, and our brief focused on the historical analysis side, in which the district court basically agreed with the state's experts that, well, in the founding era, you couldn't get guns immediately because, you know, they were uncommon. You had to go to a blacksmith shop, order them, blah, blah, blah. And so what we did in our amicus brief is we went to old newspapers and found a bunch of gun classified ads, and some would say, like, hey, I have 1,200 muskets for sale, and do you think they would have made you have a waiting period? So we basically concluded that even in the founding era, if you lived in a city, there was no waiting period. If you lived outside of a city, maybe your waiting period was the time it took to ship a gun or travel to somewhere where they sold them. So it's just a nonsensical argument. You know, I think the district court said, or one of the state's experts said, there were no Guns R Us stores in the founding era. Maybe not, but there were lots of guns available for sale. You don't have to buy it at a Bass Pro Shop in 2026, you know.
Yeah. So. And more importantly, there were no laws in place that established this sort of arbitrary cooling off period, right? So I mean, to me, if you lived in rural Virginia where I do, and you know, I would have had to wait 2 or 3 weeks to get a firearm, that's not akin to a law saying, Cam, you cannot take possession of that gun until the state says so, right? I mean, that's just a completely different animal than the built-in waiting period, you know, in a era of you know, horse and carriage, right?
Yeah, and the only reason they're talking about that built-in waiting period is because they know there's no laws. You know, I think some of the other laws they cited were laws disarming drunkards, because they said, well, a law disarming drunkard had a waiting period because you had to sober up before you could have guns again. It's just like, wow, we're really reaching here, you know. So they know there's no laws like this. That's why they're stretching to these ridiculous comparisons.
Or saying that there's no right to acquire at all, right?
Yeah.
This is a commercial transaction, and you know, the Supreme Court said those are presumptively lawful. So no need to investigate. No need to do that historical analysis. It's just you know, condition of buying a gun. Even in a private sale that doesn't involve, you know, an FFL. I mean, yeah, you're right. No matter what argument they're using, they're still I think, trying to twist reality beyond recognition. Yeah,
they made a terrible argument. Their experts are all liars, and they're probably going to win because it's the Second Circuit. So nothing we do matters, and the rules don't matter, you know. But yeah, we'll see. After this is done, I'm going to listen to those oral arguments. I think they're going now or might have just concluded now because they gave 10 minutes to each side. So we'll see. I'm not optimistic because of the circuit, but they'll also appeal to the Supreme Court, I'm sure, after this, or go back down for final judgment. I forget if it's a preliminary injunction case. I know they also challenged the magazine ban in this case in Vermont, but it's I think that challenge is precluded by circuit precedent, so they'll just have to appeal their way up. It was already decided in another Second Circuit case. So,
okay. And we do have a circuit court split on the issue of waiting period, right? Tenth Circuit has said
Ortega, yes.
In Ortega versus Grisham.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll spur interest at the Supreme Court. We'll see.
I mean, you would think that's they usually care about circuit splits, but at this point, I'm going to tell the Supreme Court, put it on the list behind assault weapons bans, please.
I'm right there with you. Kazis Moros from the Second Amendment Foundation, thank you as always for your time. We'll let you get to listening to those oral arguments, and I look forward to doing this again very soon.
Thanks, Cam. Always a pleasure.
My thanks to Kazis for joining us on the show. Looking forward to doing this again with him very soon. And before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report, I want to talk about this for a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. And that's why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story all its own. This is my Modern Rugged Leather bag, and I absolutely love it. Every stitch, buckle, and strap reflecting timeless craftsmanship. And it's backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather, modern style, timeless durability. It's backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. Shop the full collection and find yours today. Maybe even one that looks a lot like mine at modernrugged.com. Again, that is modernrugged.com. All right, on to today's recidivist report. We will start there. With a headline from, I believe this is, Pennsylvania, the Trib Live website. Man on probation for 2024 gun store burglary arrested for fleeing traffic stop. Now, what's interesting about this, first of all, the fact that, you know, this gun store burglary was just 2 years ago and he's already out on probation. But 20-year-old Stein Sardui was actually tried and charged in federal court. And generally speaking, like time off, early release, not really a thing in the federal court system. I think maybe 10% of your sentence is all that can be knocked off. Sardi took a deal in December of 2024 for his part in the burglary of RC Firearms in New Kensington, Pennsylvania. He was sentenced in March of last year to 2.5 years in federal prison. But according to the DA, he was free on probation. Court records say he's got 3 years of probation remaining. So even though it's only been 13 months since he got that 2.5 year federal prison sentence, Sardi is, was out on the streets, which is confusing and perplexing to me. Sardi and another man, Michael Gein, used a stolen pickup as a battering ram, right? They ran into the front of that gun store, shattered the glass, shattered the door, ran inside, grabbed as many guns as they could, then took off. Gein was sentenced to 20 months in federal prison. In this most recent incident, Sardi was accused of driving a stolen car on April 19th when police in Arnold tried to pull him over in front of a Denny's restaurant for a non-working taillight as well as for speeding. Sardi, they did not stop. He continued out of the parking lot, and then he jumped out of the moving vehicle and ran towards a house. Passenger then climbed to the driver's seat, put the car in park. Police were able to identify the vehicle as stolen by speaking with the owner listed in the registration. Two passengers in the vehicle helped police identify Sardi using his Facebook profile. They told police that Sardi was wearing a mask and rubber gloves. As they're searching the area, Sardi then apparently ran from a yard, got into an Uber, and tried to get away that way. But police spotted him They surrounded the car. They were able to make the arrest. He is now charged with felony counts of fleeing or attempting to elude police, receiving stolen property, misdemeanor counts of fleeing, evading arrest or detention on foot, reckless endangerment, as well as multiple traffic offenses, denied bail, currently in the Westmoreland County Jail. I just can't figure out why he was out. And by the way, 2.5 years for ramming into a gun store, stealing as many guns as possible. I don't even know that all of those guns were recovered. That seems like a pretty light sentence to begin with, quite honestly. Even worse that 13 months after receiving that 2.5 year sentence, Sardi's already back on the streets. Today's armed citizen story from Washington, Washington State, not the District of Columbia, where a man shot an intruder during an attempted home invasion in the city of Kent, Washington. KIRO in Seattle reported that this happened Monday morning at a home in the corner of Cambridge and Hampton in the town. Five family members inside the home at the time. The two homeowners, their daughter, the daughter's husband, and I guess the owner's grandchild. It was the daughter who woke up to a noise, called 911, woke up her husband, according to a Kent Police Assistant Chief Jared Kasner. And the husband, son-in-law of the homeowners, is the one that went downstairs. He got his gun from the safe next to his bed, went downstairs. Jared Kasner says that's when his wife heard shots. The suspect was shot, and that's when police responded. When officers got to the scene, they found a man on the floor with multiple gunshot wounds, a firearm nearby. No family members were hurt. Police say the intruder was armed and say it was likely that he had an accomplice there as well. Kasner said, "We believe that the suspect wasn't alone. The caller believes that there are other people in the house. So far, they've not been able to track down any potential accomplice." Investigators spent about 11 hours there in the scene yesterday gathering evidence. At last report, the suspect suffering life-threatening injuries, but has not passed away. Chief doesn't know why this particular home was targeted, but hopefully we'll get some answers here in the future. And the bottom line is that this armed intruder and any potential accomplices that were there did not get what they came for. In fact, got quite the opposite of what they came for, thanks to the actions of the homeowner's son-in-law, armed with a firearm of his own, and willing and able to use that firearm to protect his family and loved ones. On to today's good deed of the day from Dothan, Alabama, where a man was able to save several families from a mobile home fire. This, again, you know, anytime we talk about these house fires, vehicle fires, boy, they can just spread so quickly. This was Monday evening, just before 7 p.m. Crews from the Taylor Volunteer Fire Department, the Rehoboth Fire Department, and Houston County Sheriff's Office got a call about a mobile home on fire. When they arrived at the trailer park, they found flames spreading from one home to a second home. Crews were able to get the flames under control, but as it turns out, before they got there, another man who lives in the community had spotted the fire and did what he could to get the residents of those homes out to safety. Keandre Lassiter said he had just gotten home from work. He owns the Lassiter Family Trucking and Roadside Assistance. Just gotten home. He said he looked outside. He saw his neighbor's home. Flames, you know, coming out. And so he said he ran over to grab the children in that home, made sure that they got out safely. He said it was crazy. He said it was my first time ever having to experience this. He said, but as long as the babies and everything are okay, everybody made it out safe, and that's all that matters. Apparently, the fire started on the porch of one mobile home before it spread to another. Lassiter says a mom was asleep inside with her four children. Lassiter actually had to pry the door open and get them all out to safety. He hurt his hand in the process. He said that there were gas tanks near the porch, as well as some electric toys, which also could have posed a danger. Cause of the blaze still unknown at this point. Lasser says, though, that he was just glad he was able to help. He said, I have five kids of my own, so I would want somebody to do it for me. And I mean, really, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a neighbor in need. You could not ask for more than what Keandre Lassiter did Monday night there in Dothan, Alabama. So we thank him for his very, very good deed. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'll be joining Carl Higbee on Newsmax in the 6 p.m. Eastern hour tonight for 2A Tuesday. Actually got stopped at the grocery store the other day by somebody who said, have I seen you on Newsmax? And I said, yes, you have. So that was really cool. I hope that you will be able to tune in this evening, probably around 6:45 Eastern or so. That's generally when we do 2A Tuesday. And be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. I am flying solo for the most part, Tom Knighton, under the weather. But we do have a piece by Kerry Sloan, and I am doing my best to cover all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. I'm not planning on spending as much time as I did yesterday responding to the deflections by gun control activists and Democrats who would like to make Saturday all about supposed lack of gun control as opposed to the political ideology that motivated this suspect to try to assassinate President Trump and other administration officials. But again, be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We are keeping you apprised on everything that you need to know about your right to keep and bear arms. And if you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. We've got our weekly live chat for our VIP Gold and Platinum members coming up on Wednesday at 1:30 Eastern. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT and take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll get some great benefits, and you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And again, I want to thank you for that very much. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.